next on AM 1480 WLEA, the Newsmaker Show. Here's Ryan O'Neill.
Always glad to have with us Alfred State College history professor, Professor Nick Wandy. Professor, thanks for calling in.
Thank you, Brian.
All righty. Before we get to the topic of North Korea, I wanted to ask you about Earth Day.
Well, I just wanted to recommend to your listeners an article that I read. It's called 18 Spectacularly Wrong Predictions Made Around the Time of the First Earth Day in 1970. It's by a guy named Mark Perry. And it goes through some amazingly incorrect assumptions about what was going to happen in the ensuing years. And one of the big things that was going on around 1970 is people were predicting mass starvation based on the inability of the Earth to support the human population. So,
first Earth Day, what year was that?
1970.
What are some of the other things that you say didn't happen?
Well, global cooling, for example. That was a big concern around 1970. Let's see.
They didn't call it global warming. They called it global cooling, and then it turns into... Is it the same movement as climate change?
Well, no, because the assumption at that time was that we were going through a severe and potentially dangerous global cooling process. I think at the time they believed that was natural rather than man-made, but they were very concerned about it. Let's see, what else have we got? Well, there was a big concern around 1970 about smog and air pollution, and it was very severe at that time. There were predictions that hundreds of thousands of people were going to die every year of smog, and that's largely a problem which we've solved. So anyway, the point is that sort of the stock and trade of the environmental movement is scaring people. And there are serious environmental problems, and they need to be, you know, dealt with in a rational, productive way. But I think, you know, every year the environmentalists want us to believe that we're doomed, and that if we don't do what they say, and largely what they say is a long list of socialist initiatives that involve massive government intervention in our lives, that that we will die a horrible death. And the important thing to remember is that our track record in making these predictions is very, very poor.
As far as the environmentalists go, since the president is backed away from the Paris Accords, what do they do now?
Well, that's a good question. I think sort of the leading edge of the environmental movement is to move away from government action and look towards private action and action in the courts. What's going on now is a lot of environmental groups and liberal groups are suing companies that they disapprove of for various reasons, and it's not just fossil fuel producers, it's also gun manufacturers. And they're hoping that by tying them up in litigation that they can delegitimize them and possibly bankrupt them. There are also efforts, you may have read some of this recently, that major banks are starting to say that they won't do business with companies that liberal interest groups are pressuring them to back away from. So, for example, there are banks that are now saying they won't do business with gun manufacturers. There are pension funds that are under great pressure to divest from fossil fuel producers and gun manufacturers and other companies too. So the truth is that liberals have ways to influence the discourse and influence the economy and the culture, regardless of whether the president is a liberal or is on board with their agenda or not. So, by no means are they giving up on these issues. They're it's a full court press.
Talking to Alfred State History Professor, Professor Nick Wadi. Professor, I did want to get a little bit into the Sean Hannity issue. As you know, Sean Hannity has a show on WLEA 3 to 6 in the weekday afternoons. You know, on this issue, it's It's something that reminds me of what Bill O'Reilly said. Anybody who supports Trump is on, Trump is on trial, and everybody who supports him on trial is on trial as well. Now, it's been outed, because of this information. I don't know if the feds gave it to the, journalist or where the journalist got it. I assume they got it from the feds. I'm assuming it was leaked to them. I don't know how else they'd get it. From the Michael Cohen raid, that the FBI did a couple of weeks ago, one thing that came out of that was that, Sean Hannity had spoken with, Trump attorney Michael Cohen about some real estate issues. And now you see the liberal media, and they leave no room for doubt here. They don't even contact Hannity and ask him his side of the story. All these liberal media outlets are going with it as if it's a fact that Hannity, took money from HUD, Housing and Urban Development in Washington, to be a slumlord. Now, from what I can understand of this complicated story, this information comes out of the Michael Cohen raid. And from what I can understand, Sean Hannity had some business dealings with a company called Hensler. Now, there's two Henslers, Hensler Financial and Hensler Capital. And Sean Hannity says that the media got it wrong. They're accusing him of being with the Hensler group that he's not with. And this Hensler group is accused of all kinds of slumlording issues. You know, I guess it gets back to what Bill O'Reilly said. Everybody's on trial, and and everything is fair game, and nobody thinks twice of this because Sean Hannity's a conservative, and that's the opposite of their viewpoint. What do you think, Dr. Wadi, or Professor Wadi?
Well, if there's one thing that defines the media environment that we're in right now, it's rush to judgment, and especially rush to judgment whenever a conservative is at issue. I have not the slightest idea of what Sean Hannity's finances are, and I can tell you quite truthfully that I'm not interested because, you know, Sean Hannity is a talking head. He's a commentator. He's influential, but, you know, regardless of what his financial dealings may be, his beliefs stand on their own merits. If he says he supports President Trump and he has arguments for why President Trump is right on the issues and is the best person to lead this country, then his personal life, his financial life, none of it has any relevance to whether those arguments are true or false. So, you know, Bill Clinton long ago talked about the politics of personal destruction, and of course he engaged in it himself, but nonetheless he lamented the fact that increasingly our politics is not about rational arguments and about evidence, it's about smearing people.
Yeah, it's about smearing people. Listen to this, Professor Wadi. This is from the Washington Post blog, page. It says, the Hannity issue, a warning for President Trump. Oh, a warning. Okay. So it says, the Hannity expose matters beyond what it tells us about Fox's most popular on-air personality. It also demonstrates the ongoing danger the investigation into President Trump's personal lawyer, Michael Cohen, continues to pose for the president and will continue to pose. I mean, it's as if the liberal media is in with the deep state and they're going to bully right along with them.
Yeah, well, the article is right in the sense that the Mueller probe is a continuing danger, and, you know, we're seeing evidence of that every day, because when you're determined to take someone down, you can usually find some way to do it. Even if you have to invent it, it doesn't matter.
Limbaugh says that Watergate is the big learning moment for the liberal press, bringing a president down, and that they keep looking for new Richard Nixons to bring down. What do you make of that comparison of Nixon and Trump? When I hear that, I think, you know, Nixon in Watergate is accused of using the intelligence community to commit political dirty tricks, and I'm talking about guys here like E. Howard Hunt, to commit political dirty tricks against political opponents. Whereas it seems that that's exactly what's happening to President Trump right now. Political dirty tricks are being used against him by the deep state. It seems like a complete reversal of, it seems like a complete opposite of the truth to accuse Trump of being Nixonian.
Well, you know, Nixon's a fascinating guy, and I've read a lot about Nixon, and I think in some ways he was a very good president. But Nixon, at the end of the day, believed that he made a lot of mistakes. But one thing he also believed is that many of the things that he and maybe people around him were guilty of were nothing compared to what previous Democratic presidents had gotten away with, and which the media had either barely noticed or not noticed at all. So I think with Watergate, you got two stories. In one sense, there's a lot of similarity because what took down Nixon ultimately was obstruction of justice. And I think what a lot of liberals are hoping will take down Trump is the same thing. And it is an ill-defined crime. And Nixon certainly believed he was not guilty of obstruction of justice because in many ways he supported the FBI investigation into the Watergate break-in. And but obstruction of justice is, at the end of the day, a vague crime. And it is therefore an ideal charge to level at someone who you don't like, because you can almost always invent, fabricate, or imagine some pretext to find someone guilty of obstruction of justice.
What do you make of the whole rush to judgment thing in terms of, you know, Sean Hannity is guilty. Hannity knows Cohen. Cohen is guilty. Trump is guilty. How do you think, and when I say what do you make of it, how do you think the American people are taking in this information? Are they agreeing, disagreeing? How do you think it's going to go?
Well, the polls tell us that around half of the American people will believe virtually any negative story about Trump, and that's profoundly unfortunate, but I'm afraid it's true, because a huge percentage of Americans still do get their information from the mainstream media, and they're being barraged by negative stories about Trump. And it's kind of similar to Watergate. Watergate was a very complex scandal. It had many different dimensions, but the press just kept hammering it and hammering it. And at the end of the day, the facts didn't matter so much as the loss of credibility that that Nixon had endured. So he couldn't go on as president at that point. But the media environment has changed enormously. So I just don't think the media has the ability to take down a president in the same way it did in the early 1970s. So
do you think that the presence of guys like Hannity and Limbaugh and the Drudge Report and websites like the Drudge Report make it a little bit more of an equal playing field?
It is. It's not an equal playing field because, as I said, I think the majority of the American people are still hoodwinked by the mainstream media, at least to some degree. But there's such a diversity of media these days, and there are so many conservative media outlets that, you know, for the mainstream media to convince Republicans and conservatives that all their conspiracy theories about Trump are true is almost unimaginable. So, you know, the only way that Trump is going to be impeached and removed from office or forced to resign or anything like that is to get conservatives to turn against Trump and Republicans to turn against Trump. And there's just no sign that that's happening in any significant way. So I think they're going to be frustrated. And honestly, I think a sign that they realize that is this lawsuit, which the Democratic Party has lodged against the Trump campaign and against WikiLeaks and against Russia, saying that there was this big conspiracy. It amazes me that the Democratic Party would put its credibility behind a lawsuit of that nature. Presumably they've shopped around for a sympathetic judge. They're hoping for a sympathetic jury, and they might get it. But I suspect that the reason they did that is because they know in their heart of hearts that there's not going to be an impeachment and Trump's not going to leave office. And a lot of Democrats and liberals are going to be hopping mad about that. So at least the Democratic Party can say, well, we started this lawsuit and, you know, we did what we could. But I think there's a potential for the Democratic Party to tear itself apart over this issue.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. What do you make of the whole idea of what used to happen, more or less, and that you'd wait 4 years and run a candidate that you think could beat the incumbent in the White House? Where did that go? Why is it that Trump has to be impeached because he's a Klansman or a Russian or a Nazi or a womanizer, or as Comey says, he's morally unfit for office. I mean, the reasons keep changing, but the focus stays on Trump, and the goal is to get him out of there. Why can't they just wait and try to win an election in 4 years?
Well, the mainstream of the Democratic Party would probably be quite happy to do that. But the true believers, the people on the hard left, are so disgusted by Trump and loathe him so much that I don't think they can bear the thought of him in office for 4 years. And it's not a completely new phenomenon. I think the polarization of our politics has been going on for quite a long time, and whispers of impeachment have been getting a little more noticeable, but with Trump, it's off the scale. So I think in the end they will end up waiting 4 years and trying to beat him in an election the old-fashioned way. But there will be a lot of liberals and a lot of Democrats who will be very distressed about that. And these Democratic primaries in 2018, and even more so in 2020, are going to be extremely interesting, because you're going to see this battle in the Democratic Party play out. And you're going to see more impeachment votes, I'm sure. And eventually Mueller's going to come up with reports, and I'm sure Democrats will see in those reports justification for impeachment. So it'll get interesting. But the Democratic Party doesn't have any easy choices in front of it. So we'll see what they do.
Talking to Alfred State history professor, Professor Nick Waddy. We're way late on a break. Going to take one right now, and then we'll come back and finish up with Professor Waddy.
It's sale time at Decorator's Choice with the Mohawk All Pet Sale. Shop select flooring on sale now at rock bottom prices, suitable for messy pets and children. Stain resistant carpet, waterproof flooring, you name it, we've got it. And don't forget about our tax refund mattress sale. Shop our Restonic mattresses and adjustable beds with features like massage, all on sale now. Queen set starting at $349. Special financing and delivery are available. Don't miss out on these sales at Decorator's Choice, 37 Seneca Street, Hornell.
If you liked our radio auctions,
now 150, but it'll go 175. How about 50, but it'll 175, it'll go 70.
You'll love our certificate sale. Just go to fun921.com and click shop. There you'll find certificates for sale from your favorite local sponsors. Kimberly Glover, LLC, K&K Auto, BK's Boutique, JC's Cafe, Patty's Pub and Grill, The Classy Cafe and Deli, and others. Visit fun921.com every day for new savings. Don't know how to work a computer? No problem. Visit us at our radio station on Ashbaugh Hill, Monday through Fridays, 9:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. Cash, check, or credit cards accepted.
Meteorologist Gary Best, kind of soggy today. What's the deal?
Yeah, we're going to have some rain at times during today, but then it will turn drier for the end of the week, Brian. This morning, sunrise at 6:12. The sun will set at 8:04 p.m., and we're looking at, rain at times during today, lots of clouds, and kind of cool as well, about 50 to 55 for the high temperature. A few lingering showers during tonight, low temperature back down in the upper 30s, any showers in Thursday morning, then brightening skies, partly sunny, and up to about 50 to 55 Thursday afternoon. Scattered clouds and cold on Thursday night, around 35 then. Looking good on Friday, partly sunny and 60. Slight chance of showers on Saturday, otherwise it should be partly sunny through the weekend. Temperatures Saturday and Sunday, Brian, in the 50s.
Back on Newsmaker with Alfred State History Professor, Professor Nick Waddy. CNBC reports that President Trump recently confirmed that the Secretary of State designate Mike Pompeo secretly met with Kim Jong-un over the Easter weekend. What do you make of that story, and what do you make of upcoming talks with Kim Jong-un?
Well, it's exciting. Personally, I believe that we do need to be ready to use the U.S. military if diplomacy doesn't work to degrade the nuclear and missile capability of North Korea, even though that is very risky. But I greatly prefer, as I think virtually the entire world does, that we sort this out diplomatically, and I think there's some really good signs that we might be able to do that. The the fact that North Korea just froze its nuclear testing and missile testing is a good sign. It's a sign of good faith on their part, something they didn't have to do. And at the end of the day, I don't think there's any great rational reason for this tension between our countries. The North Koreans believe that we want to invade their country and change their regime. And there might be a few hotheads in America who want to do that, but I don't believe for a second that that's a realistic possibility, if for no other reason than because of China. China wouldn't stand for that. So I think if we can reassure the North Koreans that if they want to live in their Stalinist fantasy land indefinitely, that we will let them do it. And if we can come to an understanding, I hope that we can convince them to denuclearize. And I think there's a good possibility we can. I'm very optimistic.
Professor Wadi, one of the things that both liberals and conservatives have agreed upon is that Trump's Twitter posts are very negative and that he shouldn't be making them at all. Do you agree with that? What do you make of the whole? And when I say that, I was looking at one of the tweets that the president put up about North Korea, saying we have not given up on anything and they have agreed to denuclearization, site closure, and no more testing. I want to get your thoughts on that, but before that, what do you make of all the tweets? Is that okay or not okay?
Well, I follow the president's tweets, and I disagree with all those who say he should stop tweeting. You know, he spouts off, he speaks his mind. Some of those things are going to offend certain people. But, you know, asking him to not tweet is like asking Trump to not be Trump. If all his communications were filtered through the Washington establishment, he wouldn't be Donald Trump anymore. So, and Twitter is a way for him to speak directly to the American people, directly to the world. The media has little choice but to read his tweets and respond to them. And I think that's exactly what he wants. So I don't think there's anything inappropriate about tweeting. That isn't to say that every single thing he says in every single tweet is to my liking or to anyone's liking, but I think he has every right to speak his mind. Twitter's a good way to do it, and I think he should keep it up.
He teaches at Alfred State College. His blog website is Wadi, W-A-D-D. WadiIsRight.com. Professor Wadi, as always, thank you for coming on Newsmaker.
It was a great pleasure, Brian. Thank you.